April 7, 2021. It's a Watt for Pedro show. Pedro Show. Happy Wednesday. Started off with John Coltrane, live at Birdland, 1962, with Eric Dolphy. Of course, the rest of his band. Jimmy Garrison, Elvin Jones, McCoy Tyner. Inchworm is the tune. Then we had Dick Circus from Brandy and the Butcher. I'm not being alone, people. Brother Matt, yes, he's on the Pleasure Point at Love Grotto, still quite in quarantine mode, but through the wonders of Skype, engineers in Estonia, we got Brother Jay Matheson. Welcome aboard, Jay.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate you having me on, man.
Yeah. Are you talking to me from Columbia?
Yeah, Columbia, South Carolina. I am sitting in the cockpit of the Jam Room recording studio.
Right, and this is where you make your music happen.
Yep, this is where I've been situated in this spot since about 1992.
Yeah, now we should give some big fucking credit to Brother Dylan Dickerson for making the connect.
Yeah, he's an awesome fella. I worked with him on a record lately, and it was a pleasure. He's a real talented guy, nice fella.
Yeah, yeah. Dear Blanca, his band.
Yeah, we worked on a live record, and it came out really good. Some stuff that was recorded at a couple of different venues here right before COVID. Or actually, one was during COVID, and one was pre.
Well, you got something to do with the Comfort Monk, right?
I did master. The first thing I kind of did with him is I've never actually recorded his band before, but I did do their first comp release. I mastered that for him.
Okay. We're getting ahead of ourselves, though, because I want to go back with your music fucking journey. Jay, please bring me the earliest musical recollection you got.
The very first I can recall is Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass. I think my parents weren't very into music, but I think they bought a stereo, and it came with one of those one-year things where it had a pick of the month, and I think if you didn't get the pick of the month, they always sent Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass. I think he owned the record company or something.
A&M.
So that's all the records that were in the house. So I would jump around the house and pretend to play trumpet when I was real little. I didn't come from a musical household. It was a sports household, so there was not much music going on. I just happened to be bitten by the bug. I was old enough, though, to have watched the Ed Sullivan Show, and I did actually see the Beatles and, of course, a lot of the classic shows there because it was a thing for the family to do back then. So they're my earliest musical recollections, I think.
Okay, and was that Columbia?
No, I've always lived in South Carolina. That was in a very small town called Mackby, which is I grew up way back in the woods, kind of away from any kind of city or anything. So, you know, I had very little access to music. You know, the radio stations in the South Carolina only play like sugar-coated pop music, no rock and roll, not even Hendrix or Led Zeppelin. The first time any Zeppelin even got on the radio is when Stairway to Heaven came out, you know.
What about instruments in the pad?
No instruments in the house growing up.
Okay. What about school, like the marching band or the choir, shit like that?
Yeah, well, definitely being the trumpet thing, I started playing trumpet in middle school and did that all through high school. And there's where I got my basic, you know, learning, you know, basic musical structure. And so when I decided to start playing bass, I had something to go on, and I could start right when I got my bass. I had a band director in high school that was a trombonist, and he decided to start playing bass, and he bought a bass, and it was a Fender Jazz and an old 100-watt Bassman head, and we had what you call a pep band, and we would play during the basketball games. I remember standing in front of that Bassman cabinet, and he was rocking it out, playing along with us, and I said, man, that's badass.
Now, Bone is bass clef, so he was on the right road. So it was him actually playing that hit to you to bass.
You know how bass is. It's, I think, you know, I only had a few lessons. I never had bass lessons. I had a few guitar lessons when I was in high school. I was kind of a late starter with all this because where I lived, there was no opportunity to really, you know, have lessons and for much of anything. But luckily, another band director played in a band, like a wedding band, and he had his guitar player come to town. He had to drive like 30 minutes, and five or six of us kids were taking guitar lessons there. And, you know, I got guitar lessons, but it was very soon after that that I decided to switch to bass.
Now, you must have got a guitar, right?
Yeah, I got a Fender, a 66 Mustang from the pawn shop.
Now, how'd that happen? Was that a gift, or was that you on your own? Or?
Oh, yeah, my parents didn't want me playing music. They didn't want to buy me any of that kind of stuff, so I got a job at the grocery store, and this other band director who was a mentor to me, actually, I caught a ride with him up to Columbia, and the store where they repaired, broken band instruments right next to a pawn shop. And I went into the pawn shop, and for, I think, $160, I got the Mustang.
Okay.
And a little amp.
Yeah, you must have got an amp, right? And
What,
like rock and roll? I mean, because you're in the band playing trumpet and shit, I just want to make, and so you got the music thing, but what makes you want to go over to that guitar? That's what I'm trying to get at.
Well, you know, of course, by that time I'd heard Black Sabbath and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, I should have asked you, Jay. First record you bought with your own money.
Yeah, that was the Black Sabbath Paranoid album.
Ah, second one. Good one. And what about first gig you went and saw?
I think it was the first like cover band I saw was at a family campground, and they were playing songs like, Three Dog Night and stuff like that. The first big concert I saw was ZZ Top on the Fandango tour.
Yeah, I saw that tour. That was right near the end of what I liked about them.
No doubt about it.
Fandango's a great record, too, half live, half studio. Now, Tony Iommi. So you're listening to Tony Iommi, and you want to play guitar like him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was probably one of the main ones. Of course, you know, I really had very limited goals as far as guitar playing. I didn't think I was going to be able to do it. And, you know, and really once I got past the beginner stage, I switched to bass off.
Okay, geezer. Okay. But let me ask you this, because this was a big trip for me and D-Boom, because we were into Black Sabbath too. A geezer had big influence on me. But this thing about the we didn't know about fuzz boxes, you know? We didn't know. So when you got that fucking Stang and that little amp, and no matter how you tried, you probably couldn't get Tony Iommi's thing, right?
Oh, no. But, you know, I was just struggling. I think, you know, the songs that the guy was showing us were like Tush. And, you know, what I really wanted to learn to play on guitar was Jumpin' Jack Flash, because I'd seen Johnny Winter play it.
Yeah, that's right. I had an 8-track with a version of him doing that, and Johnny Be Good and shit. Johnny Winter was bad. But so is Keith, you know. But there's something about the Stang probably sounded better with doing Jumpin' Jack Flash than Hand of Doom or...
What
I'm saying is, what I'm trying to relate, because I think you're closer to my age, that we didn't know about fuzz. I think every fucking cat who starts guitar now knows about fuzz boxes.
Oh, yeah.
We thought it was some studio trick. We didn't know how Tony Iommi got that sound.
Yeah, you know, my second amp was a PV Pacer, because being in the South here, you know, the PV amps were the thing. And the Pacer had a solid state, but it had an overdrive knob on it, and it was on at that point.
Okay. Look, they had them out here, too, because that bass when I was first a Minuteman was a PV-400. So getting over to the – yeah, but whatever. I think they're from Mississippi, right?
Look, yes.
Getting over to bass, so, you know, I'm kind of a little – not prejudiced, but I got a certain kind of angle on that because, a little – time with it, and like bass used to be the guy where you put the lame guy, you know, but you wanted to do it.
Yeah, the bass players used to be the really trippy guys, but I'll tell you the first really influence I had as far as in person. Have you ever heard of a band called White Witch? They were on the Capricorn label.
Okay, I know about them. They were Georgia, right?
Yeah, and a friend of mine and I went to Augusta to a place called the Whipping Post, which is a really cutthroat kind of bar, but it was kind of a hard rock bar, and we didn't know who was playing even, but it was a band called White Witch. It turned out they were unbelievable. They were very Sabbath, kind of like a Southern Sabbath sort of thing, and they had all this theatrics going on.
Whipping Post is that big Allman Brother tune with the bass line.
Yeah, exactly, but this guy's bass playing, I watched his fingers, and they got real blurry because he was so fast. And I immediately got obsessed with playing as fast as I could.
On bass?
Yeah.
Because it seems when you play fast on bass, your notes get really little.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but
too many
but
notes. Fast,
I guess this wasn't that incredibly fast, but you don't have to play super fast for your fingers to start getting blurry.
Yeah, that's right.
Playing
that's
like right. a two-finger finger style.
Absolutely.
But I was...
So you're talking about the plucking hand.
Yeah, yeah, the plucking hand, right.
Okay.
Yeah, not real busy on the left
port
hand.
Side,
on the
yeah,
board,
because...
The plucking hand, just being able to drive it real fast, you know.
I don't mean to talk over you, but yeah, the finger in hand versus the pluck in hand. Because Kay, you know, Kay, she's southpaw, but she thought, well, the strong hand should be the fucking fret one. She had no idea, and that's why she played right-handed basses. Look, I want to play Pool Party.
Oh, great.
she was an appealing kind of girl. Kind of girl you don't see every day. She would never sing a song. She always said the words like this. She was the only girl I ever knew. She didn't wear any underwear. I like her. But she knew how to wear a smile. I like that too. She had that certain something.
What you say is never attached. The devil turns your gun by the best. Cause my reflection of my love. Anytime between them, the golden rule is done. Make my lucky beat on your head. Poison love, it won't be there. In good places, they did early harm. Don't get a loving that you don't want. The boom cross go down the well. Chris, I'm doing, I'm safe and liberal.
Ain't got a supply.
Pedro Show. That chunk of music started with Brandy and the Butcher doing Pool Party. To back after that, Mr. Tom out of Pittsburgh with his brand new album. It's called Fucked Up Friends 3. And this was Saturday Coyote. Modern Blonde, brand new, with Becoming Candy. New album from Bob Pollard and Guided by Voices, Dayton, Ohio. Wave Starter, Network Glass out of Baltimore, with TR. Quirky from Morton's Expanding Jazz Band, the Wharton Tears. That studio, God, what was it called? Fun, something fun. Fuck, it'll come to me if I don't think about it. Bob's Prendon, after that, She Was a Girl. The Hellbeens, Foul Water Thicker Than Blood. Fun City? Something like that. Shit. Fuck what? John Wayne, But I Got Texas. Great, what's it called? Texas Funeral. Great record. Los Perdidos. No, Perdidos, what? Asshole. Lo siento. Brunson's Burner. No, Bunsen Burner, of course. I got burned by one. What was that shit? Sterno or something? I was a boy and it got on my ankle. God, got in the sock. You know, hot wax. Fuck. Paraffin. That's what it was, paraffin. Okay, Jay, back to your story here. So you get this bass, and the first bass you bought was a Jazz, Fender Jazz?
Well, I didn't have the money for that, but I worked in a grocery store, and it turned out that the manager of the grocery store played bass in the Pentecostal church, and he had this real cheap copy of a Jazz called a Diamond, and it was probably a real piece of junk, but that was my first bass, and I think I got a little Peavey TNT bass amp when they were only 45 watts, so that was the first one. It was a Jazz copy.
Well, what did you dump the guitar or did you keep it?
Oh, I kept the guitar. You know, I was like obsessed with getting as much music gear as I could. I didn't sell anything for a while.
Okay, so now this shit you learned, you said you had got some lessons from somebody, but a lot was like what, trying to copy songs off records?
That's all we did. I mean, the idea of writing songs to us way back in the country, there was no place at all.
No. That was the way it was. In Pedro, it was like that in the 70s until the movement. We didn't know one motherfucker wrote their own songs. The best dude was the dude who could play Black Dog the best.
There you go.
We had no idea that people, you know, that weren't from Mount Olympus would write fucking songs and deliver the good time. Or at least what was on their mind, what was in their heart.
Yeah, like we'd play along with Fog Hat Records and things like that.
Oh, I saw them and the band before, too, Savoy Brown.
I never saw them.
Yeah, they call that stuff boogie.
Yeah.
it was kind of Tony Iommi's chords, but not played like him. Played more like Chuck Berry. But it was good, you know. Very sad. Lonesome Dave, great singer.
Oh, yeah. It was awesome. I saw him in a really big big live setting once. It was pretty cool.
Good singer. You got cancer, got him early. So let's go back. So like I said, you kind of learned yourself. And so what about the shit like after school? Not after you graduate, but in the afternoon, like the bedroom band, basement band, garage. You do this with your buddies?
No, we didn't have enough people to play in the little town I was in. So, yeah, we didn't have bands. We didn't have like, you know, the what most people would have, because it was a really small town and a lot of people didn't play, so there were just not people to get a band up.
You would
occasionally get a jam together with some people, but it was maybe a friend was home from college or something like that and you could get together.
Well, what about after high school? Did you go to college either for music or for something else and then met more music people?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, as I was going to college, you know, then I started playing in all sorts of bands. They were all pretty much cover bands, but, you know, I played with, you know, a lot of people, and we were playing like, you know, we would play Sabbath and Iron Maiden songs and AC/DC songs and such like that, which was not in demand. We were trying to go play these gigs and people were saying, no, this is a little bit much, for us.
What about, because you end up with a fucking studio and shit. Did you start with the fucking four-track cassette thing around this time?
I actually didn't ever get into what you'd call home recording. I basically, when I was in college, I took what's called media arts, And when they had like an 8-track machine and an old sound workshop console. So I was actually exposed to that. But then I didn't have access to it. You know how it used to be. You couldn't afford that kind of stuff.
I know. Like absolutely. I know.
$2,000.
I know. It was buttloads of money. People don't realize how that really improved that situation where people could dive in econo.
So at a certain point, you know, I basically I started doing live sound. I've actually done live sound for you a couple of times.
Okay. Where?
The Grow Cafe. Do you recall
that? Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. You were there with Sonic Youth one time.
A while ago.
Yeah, and I had brought the PA out for that, and you had your own mix guy, but I was there. I set it up and helped him. And then before that, you had played there previous. Didn't you play that little space once before that, too?
Might have. I mean,
it seems like I recall doing sound for you, and I forget what group it was, but I remember you were like all over the bass. I'm like, man, who is this dude?
Well, with Sonic Youth, I know it was Firehose, but it might have been Minuteman before that.
Yeah, must have been. I don't know.
Are you talking Columbia? Because I remember in the old days something called the Beat Club, and then later on the Art Bar right downtown, and Rockefellas and shit. Yeah.
I was a house sound guy at Rockefellas, and that's really how I kind of got turned on to, you know, a more twisted kind of music. You know, I was doing sound for hardcore, reggae. You know, I got all the heavy bands. I got to do sound. I was the guy to do work the, you know, the Bad Brains or the Suicidal Tendencies show. And as time went on, you know, my band that I was in was popular, and we opened for, like, you know, Social Distortion and Concrete Blonde and things like that. So Rockefellers was kind of a ground zero to my experience with the scene here in town. You know, that was the bar in Columbia.
Yeah. I remember. And I also remember 1 ounce liquor bottles, airplane bottles.
Oh yeah. For many years that finally changed, you know.
And like, this is going to help alcoholism. They only have a little bit at a time. When I was a teenager here, they had 7-ounce beer cans too. Like somehow, like the littler portion, people just drank more of them.
Oh yeah, they still have those little ponies. You know, they have Little Kings and Little Ponies still. There's some survivors of the 7-ounce beers, you know.
Okay. Interesting psychology experiment. So actually, you get in by fucking being, you know, the guy on stage who ain't the guy on stage.
Yeah, I was back and forth. You know, one night I'd be playing, and then a few more nights doing sound.
Oh, okay. So you were actually playing at the same time. Okay. So was it? Because people don't realize, man, the cats on the stage are just a motor, and that person with the knobs—that's the transmission. That's how you get it to the people. And so people who like want to pick a fight with the sound man are the biggest assholes in the world.
Oh yeah,
because there's a big ass suck knob you could just turn past 10.
Yeah, that was an opportunity for me to meet a lot of people, both, you know, people that would come through touring. You would meet them, and also you'd hang out with the touring sound guys and learn a lot about, you know, how to interact with people and such. It was a great experience. You know, I did that for, I don't know, 3-4 years, you know.
People politics. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, April 7, 2021 edition, Wap Pedro Show. Special guest, Jay Matheson. Hold tight for hour two. April 7, 2021. It's the second hour of the Wap Pedro Show. doing this right now? Is there a logic somehow? And are you really feeling okay? Or is it just the thing that you feel like you have to say? Like yesterday, we were walking.
I which belongs to me, and that's alright. Got bags full of sicko money to deliver today. I hate my job. I hate my job. But wait and see. Wait and see. Tomorrow is a can of kerosene.
show, we started the second hour off with Hog Wild from the Capital City Playboys Club. You know, the school there, right? Gamecocks. But it's USC. We got one here in SoCal. Trojans. Hog Wild, Capital City Playboys. Ben Salter out there from Tasmania with Fight Songs. Lucas and Bell out of Sydney with Parapet. From Nashville, Kalinich. Get it right, what? And Tivin, born too soon. Tommy Dahill out of Alaska with De Domini Downer. A little Gaelic in there. Sorry for fucking it up. Emmanuel Maresca and Emmanuel for Ayers. He's living in Berlin these days, and this is Speak Low. He told me it was inspired by Mr. Bill Evans. That's Z after that. That's Snez. Chicago with Hank My Job. And finally, Confederate Fag, Down with the Boys. So, yeah, you're giving me these, well, at first we played, I think this is your most recent stuff, Brandy and the Butcher, but, yeah, Los Perdidos, and Capital City Playboys, Confederate Fag. Next, we're going to play some 610s. So, after doing 3 or 4 years of sound, what, you start getting into joining other people's bands, or do you start your own?
I joined a band. I was still kind of stuck playing in a cover band at that period, but then there's a local band called Bachelors of Art, which was kind of a goth band. They were friends of mine, and they kicked a bass player out. So I was kind of chomping at the bit to get in a real band that was, you know, putting records out and writing songs. So I told them I wanted to play, and of course we got together and it worked out. And we turned out to be, you know, a very popular local band for, you know, about 5 years after that.
But you didn't give me any of that, Jay.
You don't? I didn't give you a Bachelors of Art song?
No.
I might have just said BOA?
No.
Wow, I can't believe I...
But anyway, you guys ended up recording, right?
Yeah, well, the first record that I really recorded that was released and was successful was actually that band. It was at before I had my own building, I shared a space, and I had gotten my 8-track, and I had a nice board that I bought for live sound, and I recorded Bachelors of Art, and it was, like I said, it was very popular locally. Very limited scale. We sold like 600 cassettes, which, you know, for back then, that was a lot for a local thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But, okay, so you get a studio. That's what happens, right?
So, we ended up getting a large practice space, and I started just kind of co-oping that with the band.
Oh, okay, the prac pad kind of morphed into a studio.
Yeah, and then as the band, about the time there was the demise of the band, was about the time that all of a sudden I rented a larger, much more proper, like business location sort of thing around 92, and that's how I ended up, you know, starting the studio. And around that time, I had a day gig where I was working at a sound company, and I quit the day gig around 92.
Okay, so that was the big changeover. So you start recording bands.
Yeah, I'd been doing it on and off since way back. I borrowed a reel-to-reel 4-track and had done a couple of mobile things that were popular on the local, you know, college radio station, but... You know, I charged them $40 to come out and do it. You probably had experiences like that way back, you know, mobile things. But, I mean, there were no studios around here at all to get a reliable recording. You could go spend $1,000 and come out with something to just sound like crap or that you wouldn't want to put your name on, you know. So
wow.
I was kind of the first guy in this area to offer an opportunity for, you know, punk bands, hardcore bands, goth bands, whatever, a place that we could come, you know, and try to make records. And they pretty much always sounded at least good enough that people were excited about putting them out, and they never cost much money. So I was always that guy back in the day, you know, way prior to computer recording, when, you know how it was, studios were a different thing back then.
Yeah. But the learning came some from that stuff, the media art stuff at college, right? But then some came from this live experience of doing the remote recordings.
Yeah, I really wish I'd had more experience recording in other studios, but there weren't anyone around to learn from.
Yeah, I understand. No opportunity.
So a lot of things I really should have known to be running a studio, I didn't at first, and then, you know, you had to learn it over the years. This is way pre-YouTube and such like that. I mean, I really, in retrospect, wish I'd have gone off to some more education, but here I was busy as hell recording people because they needed to get recorded, and so I just kept hammering it out, you know, year after year.
Jay, I think they call it learning by doing.
Yeah, I was doing
that's
that
all
a lot.
Right. And that way you kind of get more of your own style, maybe. I want to play you this 6-10 split you gave me, Suicide Boat.
Thank you. and light. And watch them. Arms stretch out like branches. Tension. Point infinite. Treacherous darkness of senses. Mouth open. Load on shoulder, bearing down. In fire. Eyes. Draw circles of light. Flesh, bones, aggregate, agglutinate, in water, in air. The anatomy of thought is life. Invisible empires, made of threads, impulses. Cards shuffled, taking new order, new shapes, forming new system. Surgery of limbs, your fingers, your pulse, as we are, the map, the soul. The geography of the body, blankets, feet, covering our eyes, cracks of rivers running through our limbs, hollowing between the hollow of the chest, the fullness of light.
for Pedro Show. Started that chunk of music off with Sex 610 Split. Necronauts after that. Wonder, Aperture, Tide. It's got a Emmanuel in this last episode. Water Boogie System with We Are, Split My Head, Sweet Ones, Authentic from the Januaries. I Know She Knows, Trigger Cut. Finally, The Mercy Shot. Xmas Freak Out. So you're telling me off air, you had nothing to do with this 610 Split name.
Not the name. I mean, I wrote songs with the rest of the band, but I think our singer, you know how band names are sometimes, and I think she made it up and we just went with it, you know.
Did you write Suicide Boy?
No, that was primarily her and John, the guitar player. You know, they mostly wrote most of those songs, and I would just like contribute like a bridge or something like that. He'd have a couple song ideas and I would say, hey, let's put this part here, let's put that part there. So he was a guitar player, so most of the main song riffs were him, and I would usually, like I said, have the C part or the D part, you know, I would usually add those sorts of things in the writing process.
And what about last chunk of music, Confederate Fag?
That's an interesting thing because it came from we were at a party where some indie rock bands had played, and I have a friend, Stan, he's a big Priest fan, and I'm always egging him on.
Judas Priest.
Yeah, and
I saw the first Hollywood gig. It was at the Whiskey, if you can fucking believe it.
Crazy.
It was. So, the singer guy was in, I mean, the band was good, but what was it called? Sad Wings of
Destiny.
Yep.
Yeah, so we're at this party, and I told Stan to get the bass. I was going to get the guitar, and we're going to play some Priest. Of course, I could barely play guitar, and he could barely play bass. But we just hopped off. The bands had finished and started playing, and then random people would start singing the songs. You know, Another Thing Coming, Breaking the Law, just to what they call butt rock. You know, and we're doing that. And then the singer came in. He is Chris Bickle. He used to be in a old hardcore band called Inhumanity, but he'd gotten big into karaoke. Well,
that's an evolution.
Yeah, so he came into the kitchen and he was obviously like doing acid or something at the time, and I told him he missed out on a good jam. He said he didn't miss out on shit, and we were going to go back in there and play some more. So we went back in there and started just playing, you know, random songs like I Want to Be Your Dog and stuff like that.
Stooges.
And you had no idea how to play the songs hardly, but people were just going batshit crazy and didn't even have a real drummer. Just random people would just cycle on and off the drums. So Chris kept saying, we need to do a gig. We need to do a gig together. And it was just like, well, fine, we'll do a gig. So finally it came time. He booked a gig and we had this friend that was going to drum. And I thought we were just going to play with no rehearsals at all and just get up there and just slaughter all these songs. But then like the couple of days before the drummer bowed out because he had a paying gig. We got another drummer, and we decided to rehearse once. And then Chris makes up this name, Confederate Fag. And that was because the Confederate flag thing was a big thing in South Carolina.
Yeah, the Capitol building.
And it was a year around 1999 that it was in the paper every day, on the news. They were trying to take it down, and it was just everywhere. So we were supposed to play a gig one night, and it was just cover songs. And, of course, you know, by the time we show up at the place, we're all these notorious locals, and Chris made up this band name and put these crazy flyers all over town, and all of a sudden, we pop into the place, and it's packed like it had never been packed before, and people are just tanked up, and we just, you know, proceed to slaughter everything from taking care of business to surrender, and people are just thinking it's the best thing ever, and you got to, and we're wondering why people liked it at all, you know, and so we after that we continued gigging a little bit. We got a little bit better I got better at guitar, Stan got better on bass, and we ended up writing some songs and putting a record out. And after a couple of years, that was done though. The shows just got out of hand. They were just insane. You know, they would it got to the point where we were we would cover the stage in stuffed animals and people would shred them and throw it. You could get a dollar off if you bought a stuffed animal or a porn magazine, and people would shred porns, and we'd put porn all over the stage, and it was just one of those things where it was just shtick after shtick after shtick, and it was just a local phenomenon that everybody had. We had this real offensive website that finally got taken down before you know, ugly content. But it was a fun little 2 or 3 year run of a
understood.
Something that shouldn't have been.
No. Come on, you got to land some boil.
Yeah, that's right. It was a good time, and we're the four of us are great friends, and they're all really beautiful. Just awesome people, just fun loving guys, you know.
Big love. Okay, we're at the end of the second hour, April 7, 2021. Dish Watt Peter's for special guest Jay Matheson. Hold tight for hour three. April 7, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Well, let me tell you a little story about Aldrin James, a man that lived a double life. Nobody knew what he was up to, not even his beloved wife. He liked to hit the bottle, get drunk more than once in a while. But he also worked for the CIA, just to handle them secret files. He ain't worthy of a song if they've done us wrong, but I wrote one anyway about Aldrin James. Caused the death of many men, I said Aldrin James. Doing life in the federal pen. Well, Aldrin James was the kind of a man who'd look you right square in the eye. Knowing full well tomorrow that you were gonna die because of Aldrin James.
electrify my mind, and I electrify your mind. Helping spirits are deathly blind. They feel around for their own kind. Brother said it all the time. No suffering on Sunday.
Get it on in the sun.
You electrify my mind.
Watt for Pedro Show. Started the third hour off with Alder Chains from Buck Stanley. And Tragic Comedy, part two of After Hours Jam. Nick Francis and Tollum with two. Tollum's calling a lot of his shit by just numbers, I guess. He used to be into these 100-word titles, so now he's going the other way.
I go by the numbers.
Stony Spring after that, Swim in Class. Survival Knife, Loose Power. I think that had the bass man from Unwound. We lost that brother a few months ago. Really nice cat. And Wild Root finally with the Sticky Stuff. So, off-air people, Jay's hit me the fact that a lot of these projects are the same people in different roles. Is that correct?
Yeah, Alder James, that song by Buck Stanley. Buck Stanley was fronted by the guy that played bass in Confederate Fag, and he was the drummer for a 6-10 split. So he drummed with me in one band, played bass in another band, and I played guitar. And in this band, he's playing guitar and singing. So he's just a talented guy. His lyrics are extremely funny. I don't know if anybody really caught the lyrics of that song, but Stan is a really humorous guy. And we've MC'd things together, and we're considered a bit of a comedy team when we get rolling.
No. It seems like was this kind of a departure for the bass? Because, I mean, the pictures you gave me and you with these projects, you kind of make a transition?
As far as from bass to guitar?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was the only two times I really played guitar was Confederate Fag, and that was just due to a mishap at a party. And currently, I'm playing guitar. The guitar picture you see is from Brandy and the Butcher, which is the current band. And I just want to basically play rock and roll, you know, with a kind of a retro punk twist, maybe Dead Boys kind of rock and roll sort of stuff, and definitely Stooges, all that mixed in there. And nobody in this area wanted to do that kind of stuff, so it forced me to have to play guitar. And so the drummer is actually the old Confederate Fag drummer, so I'm back with my old buddies. And he just retired from the Army, and he said when we got out of the Army, we were going to put a band together. So then we got another one of his guy that he'd served with, and he was an Army musician, as this other guy, Roger, was. And we ended up putting this Brandy and the Butcher thing together, which has gone very well. Our record, you know, we put it out on a vinyl, and it's gotten some cool reviews and stuff.
The other Army guy, he's the bass?
Yeah, he's the bass player.
Okay,
his name's
so
Roger.
I'm curious. Roger, sorry.
Yeah, so it's a little odd
Roger
thing
bass
with a serious
man.
Bass player.
Well, here's what I'm going to ask you, Jay. Him being a bass man and you coming from so much rock and roll bass, but you're on guitar, do you fucking learn him, instruct him?
Oh, no, not at all. He's a real serious bass player. And, you know, I take a nod from you on that because you do some really out there bass, but then you do that Stooges. He's also a big Stooges fan. That's where we kind of bonded. I said, I don't know about this guy when we met up, but then we started talking about the Stooges, how that was his favorite band. I said, oh, yeah, we can get on great, you know, I'm thinking. But, yeah,
you, because there's two different basses, right? It's the Dave Ann Alexander on the first two, and then it's Ronnie on the third one. And what kind of bass man was he? Was he more Dave Alexander or more Ronnie?
Well, you know, I think more of the first couple records is the thing. But then he's also, you know, those Army guys played all kind of gigs, jazz and different stuff.
Oh, yeah.
He threw some wacky stuff in there, and he doesn't play at all what I would play. So I just try to let him do his own thing. And unless something's just really not jiving, I just keep my mouth shut and I let my bandmates do as they please unless something comes up and I'm like, oh, man, this is not working. But,
you know, I did 125 months with the Stooges. And Ig would say like that, if it doesn't bother me, it's okay.
Yeah.
And I tell you, John Coltrane's first recordings was with the Navy. So I know about, and it was one of the, like, it was in Hawaii, right, Oahu, an interracial band. This is like at the end of the Second War. So, believe, you know, people think it's so square, the military and shit, but actually Jimmy's Army buddy ended up on base, Billy Cox.
Oh.
Yeah, there's some, you know, having a military, you know, things are, people get to where they are, where they meet each other and play with each other the way they do. And I don't think there's really a standard, quote, unquote, way of doing it. So that's, I think that's very open-minded of you, too, for letting him let his freak flag fly, especially with you being a former bassman or a current bassman that's doing another role. Here's another trippy thing you gave me. Hickory Hawkins Inside Me.
Here's a little song about my trailer. I got the widest tree here in the lot. Sit down, my mobile home's got more room in it than any others have got. Will your fancy brand new pickup truck don't impress me a bit? I got the widest tree here and I'm getting drunk in it. Well, I got my I
行ったら誰かがいる。扉開けるとカッパがいて、普通に湯船に浸かってる。温度とか大丈夫なんだ。カッパが僕を無視する。僕もカッパを無視する。なんか変だな。
背中を流してくれないか。
やっと口を開いたカッパが言う。皿はあるけど甲羅はなくて、肌とか普通に肌色で、相撲が強そうな感じも、尻子玉を抜く感じもない。引退したカッパなのかな。なんか変だな。
ああ、いい気持ちだ。
完全に気を抜いたカッパが言う。名前を聞かれたので答えると、カッパを知りそうに、という気がついたらカッパいなくて、一人ぼっちの浴室で、湯船に浸かってる。なんか変だな。殴ったこともない、ただのハゲてデブのおじさんだ。君の30年後の僕なんだ。言えるはずもない。ああ、いい気持ちだな。胸が苦しくてこれしか言えない。一応名前を聞いてみる。へえ、そうでも言っておこう。気がついたら僕はいなくて、一人ぼっちの靴で湯船に浸かってる。誰かに言えるはずもない。
Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Wildest Trailer in the Lot. This is something live from Hickory Hawkins Inside Me. Then then here's some music from Hokkaido. My buddy Nez moved there a bunch of years ago, and the Live House is what they call their club scene, you know, and a bunch of bands out of there. Car Thief School, he just put out his own label, Transduction Records, with Mekon, which is like their word for orange, huh? And then Grapefruit, our word, from the Hatch. Bang Lang with Kire Na Machi. It's a clean town, huh? Slang with Black Rain. Nango with Kappa. Kappa's this weird kind of kami, a god, nature god that's got a, he's kind of a, he lives in water, right? Kind of a dragon or something, and he's got a little dish in his head, and if it ain't kept full with water, he dehydrates and shit. But it's kind of to warn kids about, you know, being careful with water, you know, not drowning. And then finally, last tune for this, The Void, something live called Wall of Sleep. So hip is to Hickory Hawkins Inside Me, Jay.
Well, Hickory was a kind of a guy, he'd gotten out of the Navy, and he was just kind of he was influenced by like Buck Owens and people like that, but also the Cramps. So he was this kind of nut job kind of guy that, he could only play about 5 chords on the guitar, but he wore outlandish outfits and stuff. But we were playing kind of straight old school country, with, you know, a little twist. So that was my gig for a while. And I learned how to play country bass, which is a big deal. I don't know if you've ever played any, but. Okay. But learning to play real old-school country bass was very interesting, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Really, really, really interesting. I mean, the early ones were one-string fucking washtub dealios.
Yeah. Well, it was, you do that thing just dump, 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 and but then all the walking stuff, and you kind of intertwine the two, and a lot of the walks go along with the vocals, and it's funny how melodic some of the walking.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But that walking's in jazz, too. There's a lot of... When it comes to music, there's a lot of cross-pollination that I found, Jay. Really. It's all vocabulary. You don't have to, like, unlearn one thing to learn another thing. You just add to your fucking vocabulary.
Yeah, and that's the point as far as being a bass player. I finally switched from Music Man's, which I'd played Stingrays forever. I switched during that period of my life to Precisions, and I've never
gone back. I got a 56. I love it. It's got a, throw, I have it's got a
71 and a 76 and a... I forget what the other one is now. It's 73, I think.
This 56, though, ain't got the original pickup. It had a big hole in it, so I filled it with a Thunderbird pickup, which sounded good, but then I had Curtis Novak make a P-bass pickup that could fit in that fucking casing, you know?
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah, so you don't see it, but, yeah. And I do a lot of my recording with that, my moon bass from Tokyo, Larry Graham model. You know about a great bass man from South Carolina, right? James fucking Jamerson.
Oh, yeah. I just saw a good documentary that featured him. That was
man,
really cool.
We all owe him on bass guitar, I think. Now, tell me about The Void here.
The Void is a Sabbath tribute band.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And we started actually in 91, back when Sabbath, with the resurgence in popularity, they were at a low dip at that point. People weren't very interested in Black Sabbath in 91 at all.
I think Geezer wasn't even in the band, maybe.
No, nobody was in the band but Tony, and and nobody was listening to the old songs at all. And then finally, I kept having this idea that I used to be in a band called Tempest Fugit.
Well, I got to tell you, Black Flag was way into that band.
Oh, yeah. I read that a little bit in that Get in the Van book I read a long time ago.
Yeah, we come in the studio to do that record with them, Minute Flag, that came out later. And they got on the desk. And now this ain't the Ozzy, right? This is, it's the one where smoking the angel smoking cigarettes, Heaven and Hell.
Yeah, Heaven and Hell.
And Mob Rules was kind of like graffiti. Yeah, okay. There's an Ian Gilliam one, too, with the baby.
Yeah, I think is that Born Again?
Yeah. That was sitting there too. So it was like not classical old, but this is why Greg Ginn wanted to use 15s. Anyway, so this is kind of a tribute band.
Yeah, all we did was the early era stuff. We did stuff like the first record through the Sabotage record.
Okay. Yeah, I like it up to Kill Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. So right now the current thing. Is the with the Brandy and the Butcher?
Yeah, that's the only band I'm playing in right now. I do play a little bit still with Los Perdidos, but that which is a surf band, which is a local surf band that's always been around. They're really good, but they parted ways with a bass player. But it's just during COVID, pretty much, I've been kind of once every couple of weeks we'll get together and work on some songs. The Brandy and the Butcher thing keeps all my creative effort, but these guys I kind of more like play songs that they've written.
And Jay, with all the fucking shit that's out with your music over the years, what's your advice for somebody younger or whatever age just getting into it?
Well, you know, I teach audio classes and stuff, and I guess the thing is that I did wrong. I was looking for a immediate satisfaction. Like, I wanted to get out and play in front of all my friends or large groups of people, and then all of a sudden, you know, then I would take a left turn and a right turn, and I didn't have a lot of focus. I mean, sometimes you do have to stick to your guns and do something for a while. Like, the metal band that I was in called Tempest Fugit was, you know, if we'd have put out a few records, we'd probably be a classic metal band by now, but, you know, that wasn't doing, you know, I remember we got a gig opening for Slayer one time, and on their like first tour where they came out here, and I looked at what we were doing, and it was more Sabbath and Iron Maiden based, and looked at that and said, man, we're old men at 22 here, you know, and
22 is when we started Minutemen, 1980. So your advice basically is perseverance.
Yeah, perseverance. I think that's what I was getting at. Perseverance. You know, decide what you want to do and do it. But then again, you know, I see a lot of people just get too locked into one genre and style.
What do we think of genre? Isn't genre kind of a bullshit thing?
Yeah, I think music is music,
right?
That's another thing to navigate, you know, the whole genre thing, and not be worried if some of your fans or your friends are going to call you out for not sticking too closely to some genre they think you ought to be in.
Yeah, music is music, and there's billions of ways to do it.
Yeah, you know, it's like, one minute I could want to play something that sounds like the Dead Boys, the next more I might be in more of a Cramps-esque kind of mode, and just want to do something with a bunch of fuzz and tremolo. So, our last record was just straight rock record with just straight amp distortion, where the next one we're going to put a lot of like tremolo and fuzz on a few songs and things like that, and you know, because you don't want to bore people, you know.
Life's too short, right? Look, tell people where they can find you on the internet.
I'll definitely do it. My studio is, jamroomstudio.com, but my current band is Brandy and the Butcher.
Brandy with a Y, not an I, people. Look, people, it's been April 7, 2021, the Dishwap Peter Show. Keep your powder dry.